Welcome to the Clinical Research Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Leanne Wolke. In this podcast, we bridge conversations between industry, thought leaders, and patients. Utilizing a unique perspective, integrating years of coaching with Tony Robbins, coupled with scientific and industry experience. We have vulnerable and real conversations with the goal of impacting the industry in meaningful ways. In this episode, we sit down with Jimmy Bechtel. Jimmy is the Society for Clinical Research Sites VP of Site Engagement. He brings experience from both the site and the sponsor side of the industry to this role, and he's provided a variety of support within the site spectrum in previous positions, in roles such as data scientist, patient recruiter, and operations manager. On the pharma side, he worked in innovation and project management. Jimmy has specialized his previous professional experience to encourage a site-centric environment and create ease for sites working with major sponsor companies. This multifaceted background allows him to bring a unique perspective to the work he does on behalf of the sites. At SCRS, he's in charge of developing and executing the company's site-facing initiatives and works closely with industry partners to build out various SCRS partnership programs. Welcome to the podcast, Jimmy.
Thanks, Leanne. Happy to be here.
So tell me a bit about how did you came from Lilly to SCRS. What prompted you to make the change over to the site side?
Yeah, so I actually started my career at the site side. Fresh out of college, I was a finance intern. I thought I wanted to get into healthcare finance and be some sort of CFO at a hospital or some hospital administrator. So I took my internship fresh out of college with the CFO at a local multi-specialty physician-owned clinic that just so happened to have a research department. And one of the projects I worked on with him was helping the research department redo their patient satisfaction survey. And as a result of that, they really liked me. And at the end of my internship, it just so happened that the patient recruiter and data specialist position at that research center came up, and he told me I should apply. It was like $18 an hour. I was fresh out of college. I didn't have a job yet. So I jumped at the opportunity. And it's kind of history ever since. I really enjoyed what I did. It's so different and dynamic on a daily basis. A very meaningful way to help patients, as everyone probably listening to this podcast understands. And from there, I went to Lilly. And then from Lilly, I ended up going back to SCRS. Not necessarily out of a strong sort of pull back towards any other direction. What we were doing at Lilly was very much tied to the sites. I do applaud that organization. They do have a definite site focus. So I was able to kind of maintain that connection. I worked very closely with SCRS. In fact, throughout the duration of my career, both at the site and at Lilly. And when the opportunity came up to make a career change, I jumped right on it and moved over to SCRS as one of their project managers and kind of worked my way up since.
Fantastic. What do you say is, you know, you talk about Lilly being very site-focused, site-concerned. Let's just dive in. What can sponsors do to take the interest of the sites more into the top of mind?
Sure. I think a lot of it has to do with the channels of communication. And it might sound cliche or repetitive to say those things, but that really is what it goes back to, is having a lot of opportunity to connect with and have serious conversation with the site. It's one thing to hear from the site and you know, make that connection through the CRA, but a lot of times that doesn't really make its way up the chain of command to the people that make the decisions at the sponsor or CRO level. So meaningful change doesn't necessarily happen. What is important for our sponsor and CRO partners to do is, again, open those channels up so that you're providing opportunity for meaningful site feedback to make its way to the correct people, or even have those correct people, we'll call them, be the ones facilitating those discussions and engaging with the sites, talking about protocol design, talking about technology implementation, talking about budgets and contracts, talking about challenges with training and staffing, to really hear what's going on at the site level and not make assumptions, or even worse, keep going down the same path that you've been going for years and years.
You bring up such an interesting point, because I think I came from the clinical world, went into coaching and entrepreneurship for a while, and I'm back. And one of the things that I've noticed is some of the problems are the same problems that we were dealing with years ago. And without the communication, without realizing we're all on the same team. So the sites, the sponsors, the CROs, all of the tech support, everyone is on the same team. And imagine if you had like a rowing team trying to row in one direction and no one was communicating, it would be futile. And I think the same is kind of true here. So you talk about these channels of communication, but how can we really practically, when everybody has got this push to drive costs down and to streamline, how can we leverage these communication channels, and what might those be in a practical sense?
Sure. And it's not only these efforts to reduce costs and things like that. It's bureaucracy also, quite mm-hmm. frankly. There are, like I said, it'd be great if the CRAs could help drive change, but there tend to be so many layers above them that the change never really gets to where it needs to go. And that's what I think is really important, as I briefly touched on, is making sure that those channels of communication are with the appropriate individuals, the people at these organizations that can actually drive and make change. And it doesn't have to be every single site. You know, as a sponsor and CRO, who your top performers are and who should be able to give you a really good sense of, we've been doing trials for 25 years. Here's how you're doing things, we'll say, incorrectly or differently. And here's what needs to change. Here's what other models are that are successful. And the other part of that, to answer your question as well, is touch points along the way. Let's talk mm-hmm. during protocol design, way back before things are even started. Let's talk during protocol design, during vendor selection for our trials, and those that are going to be helping us with our decentralized elements, as one example. Let's talk during startup process. Luckily, there tend to be more conversations happening at that time. But as I mentioned, there's a lot that has already been finalized and decisions that have already been made prior to startup that really affect the duration of the study. Let's have check-in points during the study while things are fresh in our minds and we're actually engaging with patients using these different tools and these different visit directives through the protocol. And so we can give direct feedback then back to our sponsors and CROs and be like, oh, by the way, we just had this visit with Mary last week and this didn't really work very well. Sometimes when we're 6, 7, 8 months, a year after the trial has closed, we forget about those things as a site because we've moved on to our next study. And then again, closeout. Let's talk at closeout holistically about the conclusion of the trial and how that those things generally went, and have these sit down conversations and really engage and listen. And then I think the other important part of that is to actually take those things back and incorporate change as a result of them. It's one thing to listen, but we tell our sponsor and CRO partners all the time, if you're not actually making change, it doesn't really make the conversations worthwhile. The sites feel like they've wasted their time, even if you are taking the time to have those intimate conversations with them. And I think the other important piece of advice that I'd give sponsors and CROs as a result of that is shove it in the site's face. Show them, this is what we've done. Look at all these great things that we've changed. And this is all that we've done as a result of your feedback. Look at all this stuff. We've listened to you, and this is the result of that.
You know, one of the things that we've seen even on the patient side is patients feel like they participate in a trial and they never know, did I get drugged? Did I not? Did the drug get approved? So it's almost that 360 feedback coming back, and sites want it too. They want to know, like, okay, great. We told you this was a problem. Did you fix it? Or did it just get filed in a report somewhere? One of the things that I've heard from international sites is there was a site in a particular country and they felt that it was unsafe for them to tell the sponsor what the issues were, because they were worried about, if I'm honest about what the issues are, I won't get another study.
That's a really important point. And I do know there's a lot of sites that do have that fear. And again, I would put the onus back onto the sponsor and CRO. It goes back to kind of what I would say is classic or psychologically correct, whatever term you want to use, ways to gather feedback from even your partners, right? Your spouses or whatever, people that you have an intimate relationship or a partnership with. If you go out, there's a difference in the dynamic if you go out and actively seek that feedback. Absolutely. If as a site, you feel like you're complaining or you're whining or constantly berating the operationalization of the trial, then I would understand where that perspective would come from. But as a sponsor, if you go out and you say, we are seeking honest and open feedback on this portion of the trial, or hey, you know, Dr. Smith's site, we would really like to talk to you about this protocol that we're developing and get your feedback on how it will operationalize at your site, being one of our number one endocrinology enrollers for our studies historically. That those are the kinds of things that are truly valuable exercises. And I would imagine remove some of that stigma or that fear from the site level if you as a sponsor or CRO are approaching those conversations under the correct connotation and a soliciting free and open conversation and not trying to put things off the other direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a sense of, in that particular country, it was a major company had just gone out of business or pulled out of the country because of a variety of different reasons. So the concern was like, if we speak up, it's hard enough to get jobs here. And now that company that employed a lot of people has pulled out, and it's a very competitive environment, you know, so it is that sense of safety to be able to speak up to share the concerns. And maybe it's also not just like, hey, this is wrong with a laundry list, but also giving these things are working well, you know, in any system, there's always something that's working well.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that we try to make sure that we approach our community with is be solutions oriented. Don't be someone who just comes with a problem, come with a problem as well as a solution and work together to try to solve that. And I think that's where a lot of the power of SCRS comes from is this concept of, oh, wow, I'm not the only one who's having that challenge, right? I'm not the only one who's having that problem. It's that collective voice and the realization on the site or the community side of things to realize that they're part of a collective voice too, and they're not the only ones with these challenges.
Sure. And then being able to look and share best practices and what's going on in others and to collaborate. I think, you know, it's that old African proverb, like if you want to go far, go alone. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. But really the idea that together we'll go further and probably usually faster too, some scaling. What do you think about with decentralized clinical trials being the hot topic on, you know, just about every page right now and all the conversations? How is this going to impact sites?
The list is long on impact on sites, right? It really is changing the way that we conduct our clinical trials. And more importantly, I would say the way that we interact with our patients. I don't see a lot of, and I think most of the industry at this point would agree, I don't see us really going with a fully decentralized model. I don't think it's going to be successful. It might find its place in very simple trials where things can be facilitated. But what's going to happen is we're going to see what I call elements of decentralization being implemented onto our clinical trials. And a lot of people, rightly so, point out the fact that we've been doing a lot of that for a very long time before decentralized trials was really kitschy. You know, a lot of our lab work is decentralized, and a lot of we've been using ePro devices for a very long time. And that's an element of decentralization when we can transmit patient-related data from their diaries directly back to the sponsor, directly into our EDC, without having to come back to the site with their paper diary and then their data person enter that in, right? So there are a lot of these activities have been going on for a long time. We're just seeing a new variety of them being implemented, things like telemedicine, home health, the rapid implementation of e-consent and e-regulatory and all these different e-devices, or as our honorary president calls them, e-thingies, right? Being implemented onto our clinical trials is where we're seeing the progression of the industry.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that technology increases or decreases workload for sites?
Oh, right now, I think it's unquestionably increasing the workload at the site for a variety of different reasons. One of them is the primary driver, I would say, definitely one of the top reasons why I say that is because different sponsors and CROs are using different technologies across different studies. There's not a lot of uniformity or standardization across these platforms and these elements of decentralization that's causing a lot of burden on the site level. Even sponsors within their same therapeutic area will use a different piece of technology across their different studies, right?
Yep.
So it becomes this challenge for the sites to balance these and utilize these and implement these and train on them, store them, help their patients understand and use them. That really starts to put a tremendous burden on them from an efficiency standpoint. That's definitely one of the primary drivers for the lack of improvement in today's day and age when it comes to the implementation of technology. I think we will absolutely get there, because that is one of several different messages that we and our site community have been pounding to the sponsor and CRO partners that we work with, along with some of the costing and budgeting aspects of decentralization. I think a lot of that is just nobody really knows yet. We have little experience using some of these things, so we don't know necessarily at the site level what it costs for us to use them. We don't always get the information that we need ahead of time to accurately estimate those costs. It's not until this trial has started up and we start to receive these technologies and train on them that we start to then understand how much time and energy and resources these different pieces of technology are going to require of us. And I think, frankly, the sponsors and CROs don't necessarily have that information either. So they're not accurately able to estimate in their budgets that they're putting forward to the sites the amount of time that it's going to take them and the amount of resources to implement these technologies. And I think another major burden is training. As I mentioned, every single device and every single different piece of technology requires training at the site level, and it's not standard of practice. So the clinical staff, as well as the research dedicated staff, have to take extra training and time and effort to learn this new technology. And that's across every piece of technology, across every different study that they're performing. So it starts to really become a tremendous burden on the sites.
I think, you know, and the issue that we haven't even touched the surface with here is turnover. So you go through all of this training, you get everybody up to speed on the technology for each trial, and you've got 10 different trials running with 3 different pieces of technology each. So you've got 30 different pieces of technology. You've got 15 people on your staff. You've got a lot of people to train. And if you're not doing role-specific training and you're making everybody be trained on it, then people are having to spend time being trained on something that they may never touch, but somebody's got an SOP that says everybody has to be trained. And then you've got turnover.
That's exactly right. There's a tremendous amount of, as we all know right now, especially at the time of the recording of this podcast, there's a lot of turnover happening across the industry right now, and a lot of movement of individuals, and still feeling the ramifications of what's occurred over the last couple of years. And workforce is a major challenge at the site level. And you're exactly right. It compounds those challenges and those issues at the site level.
And as we increase the amount of work required, like, again, burnout's a real thing. Burnout's been a real thing in the industry. I think the rate hovers around 27-ish% is kind of the standard number that's thrown around. But then you add in a couple of years of a pandemic with kids home, other issues going on, depression, anxiety, stress at an all-time high, and a competitive marketplace because we don't have enough people to fill the jobs that are already there. You end up with turnover, I would guess that it's higher than the estimates. What do you think about that?
I would think so. The data we've collected generally shows that. we see that the healthcare industry as a whole, turnover sits at about 19%. And as you mentioned, some of that burnout percentage, the actual turnover rate that we were able to gather from our site community during our site landscape survey last summer and fall is about 25%. So yeah, much higher than the average for the industry, which, as you mentioned, is founded and rooted in a lot of the nuance and the differentiation and some of those things, like the weird, wacky requirements that we're putting onto our sites and the inefficiencies that we've built, unfortunately, into the industry or the place that we've gotten to as a result of some of those things. And I think, again, being solutions focused here, right, I think there's a lot of progress that we can make when it comes to those types of things. We're at this really cruxical position in the industry with a lot of different things. I would say decentralized clinical trials is one of those, but diversity is also mm-hmm. one of those things. We're at this turning point. I think we've done, from my perspective and the work that we've done over the last couple of years, a really good job in communicating what the challenge is. I would have a hard time believing that there isn't a sponsor or a CRO out there who isn't intimately involved with SCRS, who doesn't know and couldn't reiterate some of the exact same things I have. I would hope that means they're listening, right?
Right.
But now we're at this point where, okay, it's time to, and workforce, I would bucket workforce into that as well. Now it's time to start to implement some of these solutions across mm-hmm. the board. I don't think there's any one particular area that we should focus on specifically, because if we don't do one, it's not, if we don't do all of them at the same time and really raise all boats, we're going to start to see some of the same issues rearing their heads over the time. We might find efficiencies in decentralized trials by starting to standardize across sponsor and CRO organizations the technology that we're using, but it doesn't necessarily address the workforce challenge. It doesn't necessarily address the diversity problem. And we're just going to start to run into those same issues across the board.
Exactly. You know, and I think that too is, you know, metrics suggest that even the technology, if people are using, if it's standardized and then it changes, I know, saw a recent press release about one of the large e-clinical platforms choosing a different platform to build and partner with. So you end up with those changes, which will then have trickle-down effects and training effects on the whole industry. We've got the need for diversity, which then, if you've already got people doing the trials and now you're saying you have to have an investigator with an ethnicity that's going to match that of which you're trying to recruit for, what does that do to existing sites?
It's definitely a challenge that I think, fortunately, a lot of sites, it always amazes me, the resiliency of the site mm-hmm. community, because I say that a lot of the sites are willing to take a lot of these problems head on. If they're given the information and the, I guess what they want is final directive,
right?
You know, they want to know what the answer is going to be. A lot of our data consistently shows that sites are willing to do whatever is necessary. They just want to know and be able to stay in business and treat their patients properly. So if they're given starting to walk this path towards standardization, and this is what we say we're going to do. That's why sites have been so receptive to initiatives like Transcelerate when it comes to, because their focus has so much been on standardization across the sponsor companies. They start to do these things and start to understand, then the sites are willing to take them on and solve these problems and approach these things and really find practical solutions to them and move forward. They'll do it with open arms. So I think that's where a lot of the direction that we're trying to head there is, just trying to get these things sorted out, understand what they need, what they can do, and what the general accepted practice is going to be. And they'll put an SOP into place, train their staff on it, and be ready and willing to do it when their next trial comes along.
Right. Right. And that is I think that you've got people that truly love helping patients and they want to serve however it is, and they're willing to work under challenges and maybe unrealistic timeline expectations, et cetera, et cetera. Let me ask you this. Are sites paid fairly?
Pegged fairly? I would say You know, it's an interesting question. And one of the ideas that has popped into my head recently around this, which I think will help address that question, and it'll be really interesting to see. We've seen a lot of where I'm going with this. We've seen a lot of coordinators and site staff moving over to sponsor and CRO organizations. We won't get into that necessarily and the nuance and the good or the bad or the ugly around that. But where I think, well, I guess the bad and the ugly, where I think the good might come from this, if we're looking for a silver lining here, is that you now have people at these sponsor and CRO companies who used to work at sites directly with patients. Mm-hmm. It'll be really interesting to see if that shifts the dynamic a little bit in hopes that you've got, in a way, an advocate for you who knows what you're going through, who knows what you're doing. It's not just some CRA, some person that they hired off of the corner to work at their entry-level CRA position. It's someone who has site-level experience, someone with patient care-level experience that you have on the other side of the fence now that gets what you're doing and gets where you're going. So I realize it's a little bit of an offshoot to your question there, but I'm hoping that it changes the dynamic a little bit at the sponsor and CRO side, again, to have someone on that end who knows what it means and potentially has an additional voice to add to some of the things that the sites are saying. And when a site communicates to them, they can be like, yes, I know what you mean. I get it. And I know how frustrating that is for you because I lived that life. So I think that sites in our world, in the space that we function in, I would say we don't let sites be pegged in any other light than good. And if it is starting to walk the path of a different type of perception of the sites, or we hear from our sponsor and CRO partners something questionable or something that they're wondering, we work very quickly to understand what's going on and change that perception and make sure that the conversations are set up appropriately, and so that we can work towards, again, continuing that amicable relationship where everyone's walking hand in hand together forward.
Yeah. My personal opinion is, if you look at it, that you've got somebody on the other end of the contract who's trained to negotiate contracts to have them come out the best for their company. And then typically at the site, you have somebody who is answering questions, maybe not realizing all of the additional operational expenses that go into running a study. It could be, we're going to have more people opening the door to come in for site visits, so the air conditioning is going to be 10% higher because of the Miami air coming in, and we're not allocating money towards that. Or maybe it's 15 extra rolls of toilet paper a week because of people being in the office. Like little things like that, that if you're not a numbers person and you're more like, hey, I just want to serve and be with people, more of that altruistic personality type, you can miss those fine line, line items on a budget that then a site ends up, those little things end up adding up and compiling, and you could end up with a 10% under, your costs because you forgot to add in things and were held to a strict standard by somebody on the other side who is trained to negotiate.
We call those the hidden costs of conducting clinical trials.
Yep.
They're numerous and they are varied by trial, from trial to trial. And that's, again, going back to the beginning of one of the topics we covered around costs and budgeting. Worst in the learning phase as a site for what those are as it pertains to decentralized trials. We've been pretty good as a community to identify the ones with traditional trials. We've been able to talk about them and have conversations around them for years, but now there's this new modality for conducting our research and all these different ways in which we can conduct trials. And frankly, a lot of different combinations of these different types of technologies being implemented on the trial. So understanding things like you mentioned, those hidden costs of conducting clinical trials is really important for the site side. And I think what I would tell the site community is, if those are true and real costs for you, which they are, just be able to justify them. If you have the evidence and the resources to just tell them, hey, this is this, and if this is why, that can go a long way. Because if it's a real actual cost, and you're able to justify it, you have a much higher likelihood of being successful in those negotiations and coming away from that conversation with a budget and contract that meets the needs of both parties.
Right. Right. I don't think anyone's trying to screw anyone over. I think it's just people aren't recognizing the cost of doing business. You know, so I think that having been an entrepreneur with a business, those little things you figure out, but nobody tells you those going in. So you could just look at, okay, well, this is the cost for a patient visit. These are the specific things without adding in those other line items for sure. What do you think, what is the most pressing? I know we've hit on kind of a few of the top issues. If we look at DCTs, we look at diversity, we look at site budgets, communication, training, turnover. What are the three things we do to really make a difference at this point?
I'd go back definitely to one of the top answers that in my mind to get at your top three solutions here. As what I mentioned at the beginning around communication, opening those lines of communication, putting, and I think what's important, I hope I'm speaking to the joy of sponsors and CROs here, is putting regular procedures in place to enable those channels of communication. Don't do it ad hoc or it'll never happen, because everyone's always behind the ball when it comes to their clinical trial timelines. But right. If you build in these communication points along the way and stick to them as part of your clinical trial timeline, if you will, then I think that we will start to find success with that aspect of communication. I think the other thing is working with sites to help them understand and enable the advancement, we'll say, of their workforce, their small businesses. And if they're not successful with their clinical trials across the board, we're going to start to see a lot of negative ramifications as a result of what's going on with the workforce at the site level. We're already, unfortunately, starting to see that, because we're starting to see clinical trials slow down. We had this lull and then we ramped way, way up the sites, and we started throwing all these trials at the sites and they haven't been able to do it. So now we're starting to go into this ebb again with our clinical trials, and the number of trials that are being, I guess, posted to clinicaltrials.gov as one degree of measure have really reduced and started to slow down. And a lot of that, I'm sure, can be contributed to the workforce challenges of the sites. They just don't have the resources and the capacity to take on as many trials as are being thrown at them. We're starting to see that now. So it behooves our sponsors and CROs and even some of our service provider friends out there to help the sites and enable the sites to understand what it means to grow their workforce and develop the workforce that they have, because you'll be able to be more successful with your clinical trials. And I think the other final aspect, the number three thing, which we mentioned briefly, is stop asking what the problem is when it comes to decentralization and diversity, because we know what we need to do. We know what needs to be done. We've identified a lot of these challenges and these problems and these shortcomings. Let's start to implement solutions for them. And let's start having conversations about those things. Let's get those things in front of our community and say, here's what we're doing to solve this problem. Here's what we've done for sites, or with sites, with sites to solve these challenges when it comes to diversity. These are practical things that we're doing that other sites can implement. And I think it's important that we have those types of conversations with a variety of sponsors and CROs, as well as, equally as important, a variety of different site types. Don't just talk to the big guys. Don't talk to the academic centers and the hospitals. Make sure we're bringing in and showing those success stories from our grassroots efforts, from our small sites, our small businesses, our clinic-based sites as well, because it takes all of these different types of sites to conduct our clinical trials. And I think focusing on what's being done and what solutions are being implemented and acting on those solutions is the way that we continue to move forward.
I love that. Great answer. Great suggestions. You know, and the one thing that you talked about too is about sharing what's working. And I think that goes back to that communication piece. So it's about communication. It's about understanding each other. It's willing to have these conversations to move things forward and a willingness to try things and be like, hey, we know what the problem is. Let's try this and see if it works. It might work. It might not. But if we don't try anything, we're going to be in the same place next year.
Exactly. Cautious progress is the way to approach a lot of these things. But I think none of this will happen in a vacuum. And again, we need to work together. What can we do with our sites and our sponsor and CRO partners to continue to advance our clinical trials and find success in the modern era of clinical research?
Right. Well, Jimmy, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. And love what you're doing and continue to follow and be inspired by that.
Thanks, Leanne. It was a lot of fun and it was great to be here and share the voice of the sites and contribute to the conversation. So thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Clinical Research Coach. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you'd subscribe and leave a rating and a review. I truly hope that you got something out of this episode that can help us all work towards our goal of making a meaningful difference in the lives of others.